Good afternoon. First meeting of the House Committee on Community and Regional Affairs is called to order. Present today are Representatives Kopinen, Maru, Furnace, Gruenberg, Phillips, and Chairman Ball. Today we're going to have a briefing from the Commissioner's Office, Department of Community and Regional Affairs. I have just a couple of quick announcements first. We're going to be getting a new committee table. I hope you all like it. You'll notice you have new chairs. If your chair is too low, you can rotate it counterclockwise and it will get higher, and vice versa.
I have to do it with my legs crossed.
You just take your time and turn it several times and you'll find that it goes up. You can even leave the feet on the ground and just spin it.
Yeah.
At least that's what I do. I'd like to announce that at 4:30 today, we will be meeting with the HES Committee and the House Resources Committee in the House Finance Committee Room to join with those two committees on their mental health lands briefing. Some of you already sit on HES and Resources, but some of you don't, so you might want to attend that meeting today at 4:30. You'll find your place has been reserved at the table.
Where's that?
That is in House Finance. Then there are...
Have been changed?
That was my understanding that the joint hearing this afternoon was in House Finance to accommodate all the people who were allegedly going to... Did you feel it was going to be in HES or in Resources?
I thought it was in HES.
In HES.
Is that 4:30?
4:30, yeah. Joint House Finance.
We'll leave a note there.
But is that the way we'll handle it?
That's fine.
Yeah, is that confirmed, Sharon?
Fine.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Did you check
the staff apparently is working
on
it. This one, excellent. Yes, I'll show you.
Did it work for you?
Yeah. You have a move here in an inch.
I think the Libertarians ought to be the highest.
Do you?
Don't come to me to this set.
I'll just talk to you already.
I think it's a big idea.
I have been approached by the local boundary commission. Bob was mentioning that there's a Senate meeting to listen to their report, I believe, right? To just a briefing?
Yeah. We had been discussing whether we would be jointly or not.
I see.
There would be some conflicts. The question would be a possible meeting on Friday of January 30th.
I see. Why don't we just do this? The question has arisen as to whether our briefing by a local boundary commission should be a separate or joint meeting with the Senate. Why don't I just ask Bob to work with your offices to work that out? Do you have any preferences, members? Yes.
Is one of the issues going to be the North Slope?
No, sir. It will just be their report, and whether they bring that up or not, I don't know, but it will not be a hearing on that particular point. What they have asked of me, and if you guys have no objection, I'd like to suggest, would be that we give them the opportunity to present their report any way they please. And then should any of the issues before them be raised, we'll then hold a hearing to address those issues. And I would imagine that after their presentation, they'd be happy to answer any questions, though, that members would have on any particular issue. Does that meet with the approval of the committee? Okay, then I'll have Bob contact your offices on scheduling, and you have no preference whether it be joint hearing or separate. Do you know whether there's a preference on the part of the commission?
They don't, whatever the desire is, but the North Slope detachment will be part of their report.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yes.
One of the things that has come up is if there are people from North Slope Borough or from Cotsview coming in, that it might be convenient if there was hearings in the same place.
Okay, well, why don't I just... Yes, sir, Mr. Murray.
Mr. Chairman, if I had my druthers, I'd prefer to have a separate meeting. Because
okay.
I find that joint meetings sometimes get to be really cumbersome, and they're always chaired by senators.
All right, well, why don't we do that? Why don't we have our own meeting and make every effort to have it on the same day so that if people are in from out of town, we can make things easy for them, and Bob and Commissioner Smith can put that schedule together along with your staffs to make sure that if for some reason it has to be at an odd time, it's convenient for each and every one of you. Are there any other matters that need to be brought up that would accommodate the members in any way before we get to the commissioner's presentation? Well, then hearing none, anything else that needs to be done? Okay. Then hearing none, we have with us today Deputy Commissioner Jeff Smith, Department of Community and Regional Affairs, representing the department. The Commissioner Smith will brief the committee on concerns of the department, status of ongoing issues, and the budget.
Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Noddy really appreciates the invitation to present an overview of the department today. He apologizes for not being able to be in attendance and asked me to come in his place. I'll be very brief on some of the issues that I want to discuss, and if there are questions, leave some time to discuss those with the members. The first item I'd like to talk about is our FY87 operating budget. Putting together our FY87 operating budget, we made a sincere attempt to put together a very responsible budget based on the revenues that were projected. And we knew that we'd have to reduce our budget. And we came in with the philosophy that we are going to, as much as possible, mitigate those reductions from having an effect on our services that we provide to the citizens of Alaska. And I think we've done an excellent job of doing that. We utilized existing dollars where possible, with the exception of $40,000, to cover shortfalls in past budgets and to bring our vacancy rate among our personnel to a livable percentage. We, in some of our programs, operated with as much as a 15% vacancy rate, which became almost a nightmare to manage financially and leaving positions open. We now have that down to no more than 5% in any of our budgets. We had a net reduction from FY86 to FY87 of $4,242,000. We deleted 5 positions in the budget. And I think this is all the more important when you realize and look at the makeup of our budget. 95% of our department's budget goes for grants and formula programs and are not discretionary costs. In addition to the reductions we took place, we're going to assume some significantly new responsibilities this year, and we did it within existing dollars already within their department. We're going to be implementing the single audit regulations that the governor promulgated this last year, which we all know are going to have a serious effect on the smaller communities and the unincorporated communities of the state. We have assumed new responsibilities for the municipal assistance program without any corresponding staff. We are opening up a new office in Galena in March, again without any new additional dollars. We are getting ready to implement an energy mortgage valuation program, which we think is going to strengthen the quality and the energy efficiency of homes built throughout Alaska when that is implemented. We work very closely with the construction industry and the financial community in structuring a fair and equitable process to ensure that quality and energy efficiency. We're going to assume responsibility for past compliance and future compliance to the Voting Rights Act, which, as you are aware, the state of Alaska has had to comply with since 1972, although compliance has not been nearly what it should be. And we are going to make a serious attempt to get into compliance with that act and to remain in compliance from now and into the future. And as we've seen this last year, and we believe we are going to see a significant increase in local boundary commission activities, which require a great deal of staff work on behalf of the department. We're also looking at, in terms of our budget, of preparing for any possible impacts that the reclassification study that is being performed by the Department of Administration might have on our budget, so that we're not forced into a position of coming back to the legislature and asking for increased costs. With your permission, I'd like to move on. 3 pieces of legislation that we think are critically important and would like to see passed this year.
You want to take questions at the end? Or
however you want to do, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I've got several budget questions. Maybe, do you have an estimate of how much time you're going to take for these other points, and then they can, is it quick, or you want to stop for a
minute? We can do questions before.
Okay. Mr. Phillips?
Yeah, I got a couple questions. But I think I know the answer to this one. On your bottom line, the municipal assistance, municipal revenue sharing, and it shows 60 to 59, and it goes up to 137. I think tab 29 transfers the duties for you to take over. I couldn't remember what it was municipal assistance from revenue share.
Municipal assistance. And that was the big increase.
Okay, and that's why it was an increase there, because you took over that function of the Department of Revenue.
Probably be
had it formally.
Yes.
I just want to clarify that. The other one was that about a month ago, the commissioner had sent, at least, I think he sent to all legislators about the senior citizens tax and rent rebates, or whatever you want to call it. And I wanted to find out, I guess they were prorated, and they're, at least the impression, I think, if I can remember right, that there was going to be a supplemental coming in to bring it up to 100% or something like that. Could you briefly explain what's going on with that program?
I was going to address that under legislation, since you have a bill in your committee that relates to that. But basically, the senior citizen exemption programs, both homeowners and renters, which is underfunded. For FY87, we estimate that under the current structure of the program, that we will need $7.8 million to fully fund that program. We have in the budget and requested $4 million to operate that program with. We have some thoughts and ideas and some policy issues that we've been raising for the last 3 years, which we think are significant and need further discussion and debate among the legislature. And I'd be glad to answer that in more detail when I talk about that specific piece of legislation, if that's okay.
Yeah, probably.
Thank you. And I've asked Bob to go up to the finance room and get us immediately some copies of the budget documents so that you gentlemen will have it before you.
I passed out the summary, which is the only thing that I had available, with the exception of our large budget package.
Sure. Would you like to have finance, please, and get these? Go right ahead.
I'll probably get an answer to this later.
Mr. Chairman?
Please go ahead.
One question. You mentioned the department will take on the compliance of the Voters' Rights Act. Are you talking about elections having to do with local boundary decision elections, or are you talking the whole gamut of violations or concerns within the state?
Well, the elections office has done, I think, an admirable job of complying with the Voting Rights Act on precincts and polling places, the other aspects. And where we've not done as well is on municipal activities, whether it's passing a voting ordinance, an election ordinance, to annexing property or incorporating. No one stayed on top of that. No one has a handle on that. And we are out of compliance. And as an example, we annexed some 1,200 acres in Fairbanks this last summer. Fairbanks went to implement that annexation, and the Justice Department told them that they will not process that until they come into complete compliance. And going back almost 13 years on issues that Fairbanks has done.
Excuse me, could you unlock
that? They've not complied to the Voting Rights Act. So it is becoming more and more apparent that the Justice Department is aware of the requirements Alaska has and its lack of compliance, and is preventing actions taken now from going into effect until their past issues are cleared up. Since many of the municipalities, and Fairbanks certainly doesn't fit this category, but many municipalities don't have sufficient resources to have the technical capabilities to do that themselves, we are assisting them and assisting all of the communities, including Fairbanks, to achieve this level of current compliance. But it's a very detailed act that governs a wide range of activities that you normally would not associate with the Voting Rights Act, at least I did. I thought that if there was discrimination in voting and people were being preempted from exercising that right, but it covers the whole gamut, whether there's an actual vote in question or not.
Maybe I can just re-clarify. You're talking principally, your involvement will be those concerns arising under Title 29.
Yes.
Is that probably a good capitalization?
Yes.
Okay. Representative, go ahead.
Are you intending to go beyond Title 29, or are you is it confined to Title 29?
What we've done is we've met with the governor on this issue. He appointed a number of people to get together. We've got together with elections, law, Department of Education, other areas and agencies that have compliance requirements to the Act, and are developing a comprehensive brochure on the different activities that are covered by the Act and who and which agency is responsible for that compliance, so that we are covered within the administration, the full, complete requirements of that act.
Thank you, sir. Representative Brunberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to request that this committee hold a hearing in conjunction with any other affected committee, probably judiciary and state affairs, and ask for a complete briefing, teleconference briefing if necessary, by the Justice Department on this state's compliance with the Voting Rights Act.
In any particular regard or in general?
In general.
Do you have a particular interest, though?
No, I just want to see how we're doing in compliance with the federal act, and not just in relation to the municipal elections that Mr. Smith has mentioned, but I'm concerned this state has been under federal scrutiny for a long time, and I'd like to see very specifically, with distribution to the committee members in advance of the hearing, where we are out of compliance. Number two, specifically what this state is doing to get back in compliance with that act. And I think it should be a joint hearing with judiciary and state affairs, and a complete briefing by the Justice Departments with presence of the various departments, so that we can see what the Justice Department has said we need to do, and specifically what each department is doing. And I'd like the departments to be prepared to report how they're complying with Justice Department recommendations, so that we can take whatever action is necessary to ensure that we're in complete compliance with the act, or that we get waivers or whatever is necessary. And I'd like that as soon as we can certainly do it.
Just a small question, and I don't know that you would have the answer. Excuse me, could somebody unlock that door, please? You have to turn the little thing in there so that it stays unlocked. Bob, could you unlock the door, please?
It is unlocked.
Well,
no, she is there.
She wasn't able to get in, so there's something wrong.
Is it locked, or is it just...
No, it has to be straight up.
Yeah. Straight up.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had an issue, just a quick one, come up having to do with people who were voting in municipal elections but who resided outside the municipality. For that matter, people who were running for office and resided outside the municipality. And the problem was clearly that the way the law is written, intent to return, having once been present in the municipality, is accepted, if not acceptable, by the Division of Elections as proof of residence on its face. That is, residence is determined by where you're registered to vote, and voter registration is determined by where you say you live. And because of this issue of the Voting Rights Act, the state, or those people we've spoken with in the various offices and legal services and so forth, are very leery of getting involved in the issue and feel that if they try to tighten the residence requirement on voter registration, they'll run into problems. I just wanted to know whether you have information on this sort of an issue, whether it's come to your attention, or whether you feel it's in the purview of the Division of Elections and not associated with any of your problems.
Yeah, I don't, Mr. Chairman. All I know is that the elections allows me to remain a registered voter of Kotzebue, my hometown, and considers me a resident of Kotzebue, even though I've lived in Juneau now for 3 years working for the governor.
Thank you. I believe Representative Kopanen, then Representative Maru, and then Representative Bruin.
My opinion is sort of off the point, but it's back to the budget we were presented. Have you calculated the possible impact of Graham Rudman on your federal share?
We've taken a brief look at Graham Rudman just as an exercise for my own interest. And I think that people need to take a hard, cold look at the effects Graham Rudman are going to have, and they are going to be felt by the people, I think, as early as March of this year. And I think it's going to have a serious impact on all of the federal programs that come to Alaska, and specifically the job training and block grant programs that are the main backbone of our federal programs. Had staff do a computation yet because I wanted to wait to see what the numbers were from the Federal Office of Management Budget and the General Accounting Office to see if Grant Rudman, in fact, was going to be triggered as early as March before I got them involved in an actual dollar value of that effect.
But I appreciate it when you do. Before Representative Maru speaks, I'd just like to correct my procedural failures in noting that the meeting did begin on time at 3 o'clock, and that today is the 20th of January, 1986. Mr.
Maru. Mr. Chairman, with regard to what you were saying on residency, I've investigated this matter because it's of some interest to me. In fact, I introduced a measure on it in the last session. At the present time, one is purged from the rolls if one does not vote. within 2 years. If you don't vote for 2 years or 3 years or more, then you're just simply dropped and you have to re-register. However, it is 2 years. However, you can vote absentee forever.
Right.
You can move to California. I don't know what the California law is, but presumably you could vote there, and you could also send in an absentee ballot from there forever, for, literally for as long as you live. I introduced a measure, a bill that would reduce that also to 2 years, that you have to come back and re-register or vote in person in Alaska every 2 years. You can't just move outside. This is a continuing and increasing problem. In my own area, the percentage went up from 1982, I think it was 12.5% of the electorate, to 13.3% of the electorate. That's more than one out of every 8 people. What do we do when we get to the point where one out of 2 people is absent and still voting, and they're controlling things for us here, even though they literally may have been living, in one case, a person is living in Nepal, and apparently still is in Nepal for years, and is still voting as an Alaskan. The Division of Elect.
How did they get the ballot there in time, given the, even the U.S. Postal Service?
Oh, they asked for them months ahead of time. The Division of Elections is not required, and therefore does not keep track of who lives where, how long, except that there are horror stories of people living outside the United, not only outside the state, but outside the United States for years upon years, and they still vote. I just wanted to comment on that. It's not a question. I did have a question for Commissioner Smith on this matter that Representative Grunberg brought up, and that is, could you, in a few short words, give us the kernel of the problem with regard to justice? What is it we're not doing with regard to voting rights?
Well, I think there were many issues that simply slipped through the cracks. I believe that the state responsibilities that we are directly charged with, we've been in compliance with. It's this large body of municipal decisions that have been made since 1972 that haven't been complied with, either through lack of knowledge by the municipalities, lack of any technical assistance from the state, and lack of any real oversight from the Justice Department on Alaska's activities. I think contrary to some of the accusations I heard about the Reagan administration's vigor in enforcing the Voting Rights Act, at least down the lower 48, it seems that over the last year that the Justice Department has taken a particular interest in ensuring Alaska's compliance to that. I think you're going to find that the state has done a very good job, especially the Division of Elections. What we're trying to do is develop a program to assist the municipalities who are responsible for compliance to the Voting Rights Act, but haven't done so, and the state is taking an oversight role in providing them whatever assistance they need to get into compliance and to ensure they remain in compliance in the future. But I think it's really the bulk of the problem, 95% of it, I would say, is a municipal problem. And not a state problem, although there are some issues in the areas of the unincorporated communities and the formation of coastal resource service areas where we may have been less than abreast of our compliance requirements.
Thank you, sir. At the request of Representative Grunberg, and we'll take up this issue at a later time. Did you have another budget question?
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to what Representative Copeland was asking. I see for your federal receipts, you anticipate just about the same level you've been going at before. Can you give me any ballpark what you expect Graham Rudman to do this spring for FY87? Because that's going to be something that could have a substantial impact, we should know.
Yes, I believe right now that based on the preliminary figures that were issued by the Federal Office of Management and Budget and the Federal General Accounting Office, that Graham Rudman is going to have a full 5% reduction.
So you're talking about 5%, you're talking about somewhere around a half million, 0.6.
Yes.
Thank you. I've got a couple of quick budget questions, but first, are there any other members who have specific budget questions they want to raise at this time? Representative Copeland, incidentally, is preparing for that 4:30 meeting, which is why he had to leave. A couple of things. First of all, municipal revenue sharing, I see a significant increase. Could you just briefly explain the nature of that?
The basic increase is municipal assistance program formerly operated by Department of Revenue was transferred to us. However, I'd be less than honest if I didn't tell you that there were reductions in both those programs from 86 to 87. And if you'd like, I'd like to briefly explain those reductions. Revenue sharing got reduced by $2,000,000 $172,600.
However, that is not a...
Excuse me, Jeff, could you give us the opening and closing figures as well as the net loss so that we'll have that?
About 2%. 2% reduction.
This was FY 86, and then FY 87, and then the decrease. Revenue sharing for FY 87 is $58,632,200. Excuse me, scratch that. The FY 87 revenue sharing number is
$57,459,600.
$459,600. In FY 86, revenue sharing was $59,632,200.
And then the net was the figure you just stated, which was what again, please?
$2,172,600 less.
$2,172,600.
Yes.
Okay. And on municipal assistance?
For FY 87, we are requesting the legislature to appropriate $79,674,000 even.
And in 86?
It was $81,306,800.
Can you, and the net again, please?
It was $1,632,800.
Can you speak to the circumstances that led you to these?
The actual reduction in revenue sharing in real dollars will only be $1,172,600. The reason for
this... Only be, I'm sorry, $1,172,600. Okay.
The reason for this is there's a program called Chapter 90 Hospital Construction included in a revenue sharing where we reimburse communities for hospital construction costs. Our costs for that program in FY 86 were $1,600,000. Our costs for that program in FY 87 will only be $600,000. So we reduced that million because it's no longer needed for that chapter in the revenue sharing program.
Yeah. What was the name of that? What name?
Chapter 90 Hospital Construction Repayment Program.
Management. Are you aware of the present legal controversy concerning the Providence Hospital expansion?
Yes, I am.
Does that assume you're paying Providence or not?
No, it assumes that we are not. And even with the obligation of Providence is found to be legitimate, which there's some question of that now, we would still have to come to the legislature for an appropriation for that chapter.
How much was that?
For the total, Providence claims that they're eligible for $35 million under the program, repaid over a period of 5 years.
Is that on a straight line or declining or increasing? What would that be for FY87, Jim?
It would be 20%. It's just
so it's
a straight line reimbursement.
So we're really talking about is $7 million a year?
Yes.
Now, just going back to this question, then, how do you characterize the circumstances that led to these reductions? You started out by saying that it was actually $1,172,000, and then Representative Ruhlberg picked up on that aspect. So, could you
So I wanted to separate out that it isn't a $2 million overcut. It was really only a $1 million cut. And I can characterize both cuts. We didn't like to make these reductions. We did not want to make these reductions. But the governor... based on the revenue forecast and based on other considerations, wanted to reduce overall spending of state from FY 87 to FY 86, which he did to the tune of 1.7%. We did not want to take percentage cuts. We wanted to cut programs of less priority to the administration and the people of Alaska. But we also wanted to not concentrate those reductions in so few of areas that a small minority of constituent services was bearing the brunt of those reductions.
See, now if I have this, the governor required the department to reduce its overall 1.7?
No, that was, I believe, his entire budget for the entire administration.
Or the entire administrative budget, due to circumstances alleged to be beyond the control of the administration, caused a reduction of 1.7. And then they directed what part of that to you?
Well, they asked us to come in with a budget. The governor never specifically targeted us for a percentage reduction. We came in what we thought was a fair, balanced budget. The governor made further reductions based on the overall operating budget of the administration. But he did it with the standpoint of to spread those reductions around so that a minority of the programs weren't bearing the brunt of the reduction and try to be as fair and as equitable as possible. Unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, to how you want to look at it, the municipalities through transfer payments make up a large part of the operating budget of the state. And the governor felt that given the reductions that were going to have to take place in all of areas of state government, that they would have to share in some of those reductions.
Thank you very much.
How much is it as far as reduction in municipal revenue share? It's about 2% from this year to last year. And that's based on oil, projected oil revenues, right?
Yes.
So really, we don't control. I mean, oil controls that. I think it's 30%, or up to 30%.
Well, if you really look at it, and I don't have the exact figures for it, but the municipal assistance program is tied to the corporate oil tax. Up to 30% can be appropriated by the legislature. I believe that even the governor's figure of $79 million, based on what is being projected to be collected, is far in excess of that 30%.
So we're meeting that 30%.
I believe so, yes.
Okay, Jeff, have you had a chance to meet with my staff, Lauren Jones, yet on this particular question?
No, I haven't.
Maybe after the meeting you could either sit down with him and arrange that he at least be able to explain exactly what has happened here with municipal assistance revenue sharing, or else maybe I could invite you this evening to participate in a teleconference where this can be addressed.
The main point I want to make on this, Mr. Chairman, is I don't want to give the indication of being flip about this. Those reductions we're taking in those two programs were taken with a great deal of difficulty.
I understand that.
I'm very concerned, but we did have to reduce the budget. We tried to do it in the best and most appropriate manner.
I understand that completely, and it's because I do understand that I want to make sure I'm competent to at least discuss, if not explain, what led to it, so that citizens and municipalities and folks who represent the municipalities can access that information through the committee. I'd also like to ask you just quickly about the local government assistance cut and how you would characterize the impacts of that.
Okay, you're referring to the local government assistance, BRU.
Yes, sir, from 7.3 to 5.7.
Yeah, I believe, and I don't have the ability to explain that fully right now, but that is not a reduction.
It's a transfer?
It's a transfer.
That's sufficient for my purpose. Senior citizens tax relief, you're going to deal with later in depth, and you've already done the other. I have just one final question about the budget. I don't have the budget book that I had hoped for. I was looking for the FY87 request. This is FY86. But Bob is now searching for it. But I think for reference, you'll find on 80 and 81 of that book the breakdown for the reduction or for the funding of legal services. Over the last couple of years, and I should say last year, we had a problem. This year, I see we're going to have the same problem, where legal services requires over $1 million to continue at existing levels. The department requests the governor's authorization for $532,100, deleted once again as the so-called $500,000 contract, or the add-on, or whatever you want to call it. And every year we go through a political game to try to get this money back in. It seems an awfully unfortunate way to proceed. I was wondering if you could help me to understand why the governor or the department did not elect to seek those funds as part of the normal budget.
We've worked closely, very closely, over the last 3 years with legal services. And it's always been our position is that this has to be a participatory process between the administration and the legislature, and that we always have been and will continue to be willing to take $500,000 of our budget and commit it to legal services, and that the legislature also has to make that same commitment to find $500,000 within the governor's budget that they are going to reprioritize for that contract we have with legal services. And I don't want it to sound like we're playing games with the legislature, because I really don't believe we're not.
It was a bad choice of words on my part. I just mean that it's an exercise that has to now be gone through. I'm really seeking some information from you as a person who deals with the preparation of the budget, just to help me understand personally maybe why it is that we cannot see that component going there as an increase in the governor's budget, and then deal with it in the finance committee if it's excessive.
Well, we just can simply afford it, and the reductions that we have made in our budget, we have cut as much as we could without hurting our program.
Is there any reason why, and I mean no disrespect, I'm really trying to educate myself on this, was there any reason why you didn't ask for it as an incremental increase?
Yes.
What was that?
The reason was is that we took the governor very serious at his cabinet meeting in July when he told the departments and the commissioners to come in with budgets that were less than what they had to spend in FY86.
It's clear as crystal to me.
And we came in the first time with a very responsible and reduced budget, the first shot with the governor.
Other budget questions by members of the committee before we move on to the substantive legislation? Yes, sir.
One thing that I've been very interested in the last few months is the possibility of getting additional money from third-party sources in various creative ways. Creative finance to run state government in face of declining oil revenues and fairly stable infrastructure and entitlement programs. What I'm wondering is what efforts your department has made to identify third-party payor sources, including but not limited to the federal government. I don't need an answer on this now, but what I would like, Mr. Chairman, is the department to provide to you and all members of this committee in writing a report as to the availability of third-party financing for their various programs. Such things, I don't know if Graham Rudman has any kind of hold harmless clauses, anything from the federal government that we may be eligible for or could be eligible for. I'd like to know a complete list of those and a brief synopsis of each. Whether we are eligible, how much we're getting, and if there are any particular problems with respect to those. Because, for example, in the House Hess Committee, we have identified several different programs that are causing particular problems at the federal level. As a result, we have moved in the Western Conference of State Legislatures to band together the Western states to get the federal government off the dime, because it turns out in many of these situations, a number of states are having the same problems we are, and then we're going to be dealing with these through a series of resolutions at the state level. And I'd like to identify those in this department as well, because from what I can see, that's a pretty fruitful source, and we ought to explore it. Do you have any immediate comments?
Yes, I do. We had staff go through this process last fall, not specifically third-party payments, but to identify any income-generating programs that we have that we're not taking advantage of now within the department. Third-party payments were not applicable in any of our programs from any source. However, we did come up with some income-generating ideas that I'll be glad to provide the committee members with.
Maybe would be more productive than focusing on a particular type of financing, just to say that aside from state general fund monies, just basically the list of your programs and the list of other funding sources that you've identified would, I'm sure, help Representative Broomberg.
Yeah, but what I'm the kind of thing I'm talking about, you were talking about the Voting Rights Act. Is there any federal money to assist the state to come into compliance?
No, there's not, and that's the unfortunate aspect of it. And we took a look at it, and we have determined that it will cost us $157,000 the first year on our getting the municipalities around the state into compliance with that, and $95,000 to continue.
The second aspect of my question, Mr. Chairman, if there are federal requirements that we find it difficult or expensive to meet within your department, and if there are no federal funds available to bring us into compliance, I'd like to know what those are and what the penalty is for non-compliance. Because if there in fact is no compliance, non-compliance penalty, and we can do it without doing injustice to our citizens, like in the Voting Rights Act, then I would like to look at those as a potential for putting those on the back burner.
I'll be glad to provide that to you, Mr. Chairman, and the other members of the committee.
Yes, of course, whatever, if you feel that that's within your means. Specifically, though, in terms of your programs and responsibilities, if you have or can make available without an impractical amount of work, you know, a list of each program and non-state funding sources that could be brought to bear.
The other thing I'm concerned about
would include, you know, if you have a mandated responsibility that you are working on and you don't have any money to do it, you would want to certainly mention that, or if you see outside funding, I guess you would want to mention that as well.
I think staff have come up with two excellent ideas within the department, given the existing programs we have, are worth consideration. One is, as the state grows and the need for assistance grows and our budget shrinks, our ability to provide one-on-one assistance decreases. And we are looking at, and have already started the movement more aggressively in the area of publications to provide that assistance, how-to books, and other forms of written communication, videotapes, to provide that assistance that we are no longer able to on a one-on-one basis. And some of that material can be produced for sale. And we've had some indication based on a limited trial run of this approach in the department that there is some interest and some willingness to pay for these documents that are produced. And that's one of the ideas that that staff has looked at. Some other ways is participatory assistance. If a community X wants this type of technical assistance and these kind of efforts from our department, participating with us in the cost of delivering those technical assistance services, although not a full payment cost, but a partial reimbursement so that we can make our budget numbers stretch a lot further.
Mr. Chairman, in the federal government, there are programs with incentives for state employees who come up with valuable ideas to come forth with them, and they save the federal government money. Are you aware of anything like that at the state level that encourages employees to come up with creative ideas like this?
No, I'm not.
Would you gentlemen like a copy of the budget document distributed to your office? Do you have one?
I'm going to get one anyway. Come on, sir.
Okay. You need one.
Is that for fiscal 87?
Yes. Yeah. This is what I had hoped to distribute out at the table today, but we just didn't get them on time. So I'll have Bob see to it that every member of the committee has one and double check to make sure you receive it.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think that wraps up our budget questions, unless there are more. You have the floor, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have three pieces of legislation. One is already in your committee. The other two pieces of legislation will be introduced shortly by the governor that we think are critical importance to the state, our department, and particularly the municipalities. One is a bill the governor introduced last year, which is entitled Senate Bill 113, passed the Senate, was referred to the committee, I believe, on the last day of the session.
Yes, that's correct.
It's going to give you guys a whole lot of time. Familiarize yourself and work on it. We were kind of hoping it would pass, but the bill basically does two things, although one we've got done in another vehicle, which you were instrumental in securing for us, and that was House Bill 190, and that's the ability to prorate for the senior programs in case of shortfall in funding, so we could equitably distribute the funds and not give one community all the money and another community no money. The main part of that bill would provide a cap of the value to be reimbursed under the Senior Citizen Homeowners Program at $200,000. We are presenting to you a revised fiscal note that will be attached to the bill that I think more accurately reflects the impact if that bill is passed, because there will not be an actual dollar savings where you can take dollar from here after that bill passes and place it over here. What there will be is a reimbursement in answering a very basic policy question as it relates to these senior programs that are the tax reimbursements, and that is, one, is this an entitlement program where we are rewarding the senior citizens of our state for their past, present, and future contributions that they have and will make? Or is this a program that we are trying to provide those people with the least ability to be able to pay their property tax in order for them to maintain and be able to live in the home that they've lived in for years in most cases?
Peter, I have a question.
Have you finished phrasing your statement about this?
I'll take the question.
Randy, if you forgive me, I just would like to not lose track here.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do myself. Well, you said something about $200,000 per camp, right?
Yes.
There's some guys downtown Anchorage, I think it's on either I or H Street, he's got a $100,000 garden. And he's been there for years. It's not his fault that, you know, the property's going down. But I think that, I'm trying to think, his house is probably not worth all that much, but if he had a huge house, it'd be, he'll go far past this $200,000 limit. And I'm just thinking of situations where a guy's been around for a long time, everything's growing up around him, and he's sitting here, yeah, I'm happy with my garden. Why are you guys charging me more? I have a problem with it, but maybe...
Yeah, we've got a provision in the bill for that exact purpose, where you have a elderly gentleman or lady who simply, on the basis of fate, where they decided to purchase their home years ago, has become a high value area.
How does that work? Your $20,000 home is appreciated to $200,000. How is it phrased to protect them?
We can use income to mitigate that cap limit for that case. You have may have somebody.
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, anywhere between anywhere between 4th and 11th Street in Anchorage.
Do you have
property values are incredibly high.
Do you have other
but the income is not supporting that kind of value.
Do you have other policy questions other than do you have other policy questions besides entitlement versus low income security that are raised in relation to that bill that you want to bring before the committee?
Well, I think that's what really is going to drive the whole issue. And then we can really look at the questions of fully funding this, making it a local option for the individual municipality to decide, to make it a needs-based program, to come up with a value cap. There's a wide range of options depending on how you answer that question.
Is this the property tax assessment?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really think that we are now down to where that has to be addressed this year. The municipalities are getting squeezed because we don't have it fully funded. Based on the revenue projections and the different demands on the state revenues, we do not have the money within our budget in the department to fully fund it. The senior citizens are rightfully concerned, and I just think that question cries out for an answer this year.
Okay.
So that the senior citizens, the municipalities, and every other people that are affected by that program know what the policy is and knows how both the administration and the legislature are going to treat that program in the out fiscal years from now.
Okay, that's very clear, Jeff. That's House Bill 190.
Senate Bill 113.
I meant Senate Bill 113. And you also referenced House Bill 190. What was the issue?
Well, again, in Senate Bill 113 is the ability for us to prorate. That was also included in House Bill 190, so we do have that ability in the books right now. But we mentioned that the last 2 years when prorating has come up, that it was the last 3 years.
We have it in the books now because House Bill 190 passed.
Yes.
Okay. So we can strike that out.
Yeah, we can strike that out. Now, one quick question on this issue, and I'm nervous about the time, so I'd like to keep ourselves as tight as we can. Just quickly, though, the issue was raised very recently that the prorating of the rental assistance program was taking place, whereas the prorating of this ownership tax program was taking place to a lesser degree or not taking place at all. I'm not sure I understand that issue, except that if that is true, clearly a person who's renting is probably more in need of assistance than a person who's paying property taxes. So what is going on here?
I'm glad you asked that question, because if we're going to get killed on this issue, we might as well get it killed. I will not allow the renters to be prorated. I think that is the most gross, unfair thing that we could do.
But it is happening now, right?
No, it's not.
Well, I just got a complaint 2 days ago.
I know.
Well, okay.
We've changed that program today.
Oh, okay.
I've authorized a transfer of sufficient funds to be placed in that program so that the senior citizen renters, it's the individual that will be reduced and suffer the the consequences of a reduced budget will get reimbursed dollar for dollar for their actual out-of-pocket expenses that they have already incurred the previous 12 months.
So you're going to go back and not only stop it as of today, but correct any prorating that took place over the last year?
No prorating has taken place, but what we will do is ensure that they will receive full reimbursement, and those checks will go out as soon as possible. There's been some talk about 4 or 5 months down the road they'll receive their checks and not receiving the full amount. That has changed as of this morning. I met with Commissioner Noddy. We've instituted that policy change within the Division of Municipal and Regional Assistance and with our Admin Services Division to effectuate that policy.
I'll have Doug Paul call you. Problem solved. Your other two pieces of legislation, sir?
Yes. For the last 2 years, the department has been working very closely with a task force appointed by the governor to take a look, very hard look at our revenue sharing and municipal assistance programs. We have worked very closely with the Mayor's Conference, with the Municipal League, and mayors and municipalities across the state. We are now have finalized a report on that that was presented to the governor last year. Copies will be made available to the legislature on that report. One of the main recommendations coming out of that to ensure predictability of payments and to ensure that the money for those two programs are given to the municipalities as soon as possible. The governor is going to be introducing a bill very shortly to give us the ability to use prior year data in the formulation of individual municipality payments. What this will mean is when the fiscal year starts July 1st, we will get the checks out for full payment to the municipalities for those programs. And they will know in advance what their entitlement would be before they put together their budgets. And we think that that's...
Is that bill drafted, Jim?
Its final draft was done on Friday and is working its way through the Department of Law and over to the governor's office.
And then within the next week or two, we can expect you to be meeting with staff so we can brief the members of the committee?
Yes, I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, before, you see what's going to happen to us.
Before we
why don't we take all our questions at the end, and if we run out of time, we all run out together.
Oh, I'll go real quick.
How about your other piece of legislation?
The other bill is a bill the governor mentioned in both the State of the State address and his budget address regarding the debt limit on municipal bonds. And I think that we are really excited about that piece of legislation. We don't think it's going to receive unanimous support, but we think it is a very responsible piece of legislation to deal with a very difficult problem that affects us all, and we'll be glad to work with you closer on that.
Time frame on having a document?
Have not talked with the governor's office about
it. So this
bill.
Is basically you're just working on the theoretics, and maybe if the committee wishes, some group of you could come back and brief us on where you're headed.
Yes.
Would the members of the committee like to be briefed on that prior to the introduction of the bill? Why don't we get a few topics together then between us? We'll ask Bob to go around and speak with you all, and then ask Jeff or the commissioner to bring the experts in, and we'll go forward.
Title 29 that you passed last year.
Yes, sir.
I think the implementation is going extremely well.
Yeah.
We've presented many workshops at the Municipal League and for individual municipalities. Prepared a comparative analysis between the old Title 29 and the new Title 29. That's my understanding has been very helpful for the people who are working to get an understanding of that new Title 29.
Could we request a set of copies, please?
Yes.
Of I assume you've got like a now something that you distribute out either for money or on request that
if we charge, we'll waive it for the committee members.
Thank you. What I'd like to get is your distribution version of the new Title 29, and if there's a charge or whatever, that's fine. I'd like about 24 copies.
Okay, we just have the comparative analysis right now, and we're still in printing on the new printout we had on the old one.
When the new printout comes, could you at least, I would assume that, I don't know, those of you, well, I need at least 30 of the things, you know. And then if we could get the breakdown, the comparison, at least one for each member, we'd appreciate that. Are there any other points you wish to raise, sir?
Yes, daycare assistance. We have done a study and an analysis of the three options that Representative Grunenberg and I discussed last year at the end of the session on how to deal with the wait list. we have...
How to deal with what? Waiting list?
The waiting list.
Yeah.
We have taken $300,000 this just January 14th and redistributed those to where we have 10 contractors only now with the potential for a wait list. Two of those have no wait list, and I'm happy to say that they're in our two largest communities of Fairbanks and Juneau. Not two of the largest, but two of the largest.
I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah. They don't have a waiting list. We still have a problem in Anchorage in the Mat-Su borough, although not as great as we had last year or the year before. There seems to be some stabilization of the program, which I'm sure is doing a lot to the downturn and the exorbitant growth we've experienced and fortunately are no longer experiencing right now. I would like to be able to present that report written so to get it, to gain a better understanding of really the difficulties and the problems we have with that program and not being able to come up with just a one clear-cut solution.
Mr. Chairman, when could we expect it?
I will hope to have it to you within 2 weeks. And the reason I say 2 weeks is we've been working on some other areas and other issues, which some people said it's been in the paper about a detachment or something. But we have to move that to the back burner.
I wonder what that's
North Slope, I don't know.
Never heard of it.
And the only other issue I'd like to say, because I was asked to maybe be prepared to talk about that, and that's the Light Infantry Division. And I'm sorry that Representative Copeland isn't here. But we are working with the Washington, D.C. staff because it's our understanding from Congressman Young's office that there is a bill working its way through Congress that would provide some impact funds to the department to help North Pole and Fairbanks and other areas around there that would be impacted by the Army's addition of the light infantry at the Army base there. And we're watching that closely, and I hope to update the committee in next week on what the prospects for that look like coming through.
Army post.
Air
Force base.
Aren't you an Air Force guy? You're an Air Force guy forever.
Before we go to questions, just a final announcement. We have got House Bill 380 coming up on Wednesday. The staff work is done on that. Therefore, I'm going to ask the staff to prepare a summary of this report, outlining those main points that we're going to be proceeding on for distribution on Wednesday. And questions, Representative Bruinberg.
Yeah, with respect to Bill number 2, which will allow you to use prior year data for municipal assistance and revenue sharing, do you see that getting this department into the same problems that Foundation Formula funding has gotten the Department of Education into?
No, I don't. And I think that, not to say that education then,
this is
I think
not
they're just really two issues. We work very closely with Municipal League, with the Mayor's Conference. In fact, we have a resolution from the Mayor's Conference fully endorsing this concept. Scott may be able to speak more on this. We received no opposition when this report and idea was presented at the Municipal League Conference in Fairbanks. I have not spoken to one person within a municipality that's opposed to this
idea.
The
reason I'm concerned is because once legislation like this is in place with a precedent, then it becomes a vehicle for legislative tinkering. And I think that on a policy basis, before we open a box that may become Pandora's box, we should be real careful.
But we're excited about it because we don't see that happening. We think as a beneficial thing.
And I think probably having them come in and give a presentation will be a good way to help us understand what problems, if any, might develop. Mr. Maru.
I have two questions for Commissioner Smith. One is that you mentioned debt limit on municipal bonded debt. We passed in this committee a bill last year that would make it very clear, it doesn't talk about a debt limit, but it makes it very clear that the state government is not going to pick up the pieces if some municipality, some city or borough goes belly up. My question is that your understanding? Is that the administration's position? And the second question is, not all seniors are poor. In fact, there was a very notorious case in my old hometown last year. Some people had an income of like, it was over $3,000 a month, but because they were over the age limit, they got into a subsidized apartment, which brought the rent from like $500 down to $200, and they had to sell their $85,000 house to get in, but they did it. So, is your department taking that into account, that not all seniors are poor?
Yes, And we think that that's at the crux of the policy question, because we have such a wide divergence of people that are receiving the benefits of that program, from the poorest elderly to the wealthiest elderly in the state. And I think based on the revenues that we have and based on just how much this program has grown, and it's going to get more expensive as we cut back on revenue sharing and municipal assistance and other areas of state funding, there's no doubt about it. Property taxes are going to go up in the municipalities around the state. And those property taxes are going to increase for the seniors as well. And the program is just going to keep growing, growing well beyond the normal rate of inflation even, or the growth of state government, or the decrease in state government. We've seen it already. This program in the last 3 years has gone from a $2 million program to where we're projecting it next year an almost $8 million program. So that's at the crux of the policy question. Is it for all of the senior citizens, for their past, present, and future contributions to our state? Or are we really trying to help those that are most in need and lack the ability to pay their property taxes? And if we didn't do that, they may be forced to sell their homes because they can't do that. So I think that's the crux of the issue.
I think probably
the other first question to ask is the state liable for municipal debts?
We don't think, and this has come up quite a bit, and I don't want to speak for the governor, but our department's view is that the state, the moral obligation issue, is not responsible for of local debt.
Do you know whether the financial community agrees?
But that's, I think they count on.
Don't speak for the governor, just Mr. Wall.
I'd like to just mention briefly
but that's theoretical. I think in practice, if there was a default by any of the municipalities, I think the state would be, and I'll probably get killed for saying this, hard-pressed not to come in.
Well, I will say that House Bill 343 by Member Representative Maru, which passed out of this committee on the April 26th, has one more committee of referral, House Judiciary, it's there. If anyone is interested in the bill, that's where it is right now.
Well, let me say, so that last comment doesn't become my sole issue on this, I think we all have a responsibility to ensure that debt is managed properly at all levels of government. And I think the governor's legislation that they'll be introducing shortly is very responsible and does do, in fact, that.
And the important thing, too, is that moral obligations are just that, and certainly the legal parameters need definition. I don't think there's any debate about that. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make it clear for the record, and also for the AML, that the vast majority of municipalities in the state of Anchorage have acted and are acting responsibly. There are a few, two or three or four, that have just gone hog wild and have gotten themselves into a tremendous amount of debt, whether you judge them per capita or as a percentage of the assessed value, the real estate assessed value. There's only a few that anyone could ever point a finger at. I don't think I live in any of those or near any of those.
I mean, you're registered to vote more than one now.
Speaking, Mr. Chairman, of the city I live in and the borough I live in.
Did you say the state of Anchorage?
The state.
That's
Anchorage.
What I thought you said.
Anchorage is a state of mind.
But we don't, Mr. Chairman, we don't see that any municipality is anywhere near defaulting on their debt obligation. But we think it is prudent to put a management system in place to ensure that would not happen. And that's the governor's sole intention by introducing this legislation this session that will be introduced within probably the next couple of weeks.
Jeff, I really appreciate your time and your information, as I'm sure the other members do. Representative Gruenberg has a final question.
With respect to that debt limitation bill, and I frankly, Mr. Maru, I don't recall the details of 343. What I'm wondering is whether the governor's legislation interfaces with 343. Whether they're compatible with each other.
Oh, I'm not that familiar with 343, but I think you'll see that the governor's bill would probably be compatible with most any debt limit type of legislation, whether it's a management type of committee that would kick in that the governor introduced last year. And I should get familiar with Representative Maru's bill, however, or not.
Mr. Chairman, for Representative Gruenberg, it's a very short bill. It has zero fiscal note, and all it says is that ultimately the state is not responsible for any municipality's debt. It is up to them to handle their own debt. It does not address any debt limits or any money or anything else.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
If, in fact, that legislation would be compatible with the governor's bill,
I think that possibly you might want to consider what the administration's position would be if we tack as an extra added measure of caution, and this committee's support of Representative Maru's legislation would be looking to tack that again onto the governor's bill.
Well, I think if you can look at Representative Maru's bill as basically a policy and legal statement of the state of Alaska, you would see the governor's bill as a management or an implementation of that policy or legal statement.
Sure. And I think you should consider that we may very well tack that one as an
I would invite you to take your copies of the current CNRA budget for your reference. Again, thank you, Jeff, and members. I think you'll find that in addition to the two new bills that Representative Gruenberg and Kopanen have ensured get referred to this committee, we're going to have some interesting things to work on this year. Thank you all. The meeting's adjourned. It's 4:15.
Yeah, it's going to take them back to where I found it.